To summarise, I've argued that we do theology all the time, but not necessarily well. If we are a faith community that values truth and free inquiry, we should practice theology more systematically and thoroughly, bringing the academy and the local faith community into dynamic dialogue. I've argued that Unitarianism is a faith tradition, that it points to a particular way of making meaning and being human, and that it is a historically rooted human tradition. As a faith tradition, it makes historically conditioned theological claims. Although we recognize the provisional nature of such theological claims, that doesn't mean we should reject the very concept of a theological claim and seek a general universalism that claims to break out of historically conditioned existence, because this is impossible. Unitarian faith makes theological claims that include the immediacy of the holy and the ever-unfolding nature of truth. These provide foundations for many of our other commitments and practices in our communities. I hope that in laying down these foundations, I've provided some stimulus for Unitarians to do the work of theology that I think is very desperately needed. We are a liberal and a creedless tradition, and so we can never accept formal and final statements of our theology. But this can no longer be an excuse to be entirely vague and unclear about our identity. In the noisy postmodern world, we need to be able to speak clearly of who we are, and we cannot do that without doing the hard work of theology.
I'm a scholar of religion, I'm not a theologian, but I have been saying for some time that we need to be doing theology better, doing it collectively, and doing it visibly, and that from doing so, a number of other features, such as ministry training, institutional governance, even our ability to grow, might naturally evolve. I also disagree with Steve to some extent. I don't think there's a sharp division between theology and religious studies, and I consider that the boundaries are blurred, both in terms of method and in terms of whether either of the approaches is solely an insider or an outsider account. And I spend quite a lot of time trying to teach my undergraduates about that. What I have to say, then, is informed by my academic background as well as my Unitarian belonging. Stephen's obviously opened up some interesting territory to guide a developing Unitarian theology, and I'm really hoping this conference will act as a springboard for further discussion and development. So I'm going to start by asking you to reflect on what, as you listened to Stephen, you particularly noted. What stuck in your mind? Did you pick up on his point about liturgy, about the General Assembly and its identity statements? Did you find Stephen's two final theological points about the immediacy of the holy and the ever-unfolding nature of truth? Did you find those challenging or natural? Did you stumble at questions about whether God is the right word? Did you take a breath when Stephen pointed out our theological affinity with the Pentecostals? The reason I ask this is because it strikes me that what Stephen has said is essential, grounded, logically coherent, faithful, and also incredibly likely in places to put people's backs up. Indeed, it seems any attempt to have a conversation about theology at a denominational level runs the risk of putting people's backs up. I find that, as somebody who studies religion, I find that interesting. In any other denomination, shared conversations about theology happen all the time, but in our desire to be creedless, it seems to me that we might have thrown the theological baby out with the bathwater. Discussing theology, as Stephen makes clear, discussing theology doesn't require the imposition of creeds. Quite the reverse, and I think he's making a really interesting point about how we're different. But it's revealing that people think it might do. So what Stephen has done in his paper is open up to us a world of theology as process, and his account of theology is creative, dynamic, and evolving. I think it's exciting stuff. As well as what theology is, I think there are also some very interesting questions about who does theology. Stephen points out that we do it all the time, but he draws our attention to the depth at which this reflection happens. To some extent, this must be what we expect our religious professionals to do, to be doing this work of developing, articulating, and challenging theologies. This does not mean, however, that I think this work of theology should be, can be, or is the work of experts separate from the lived reality of Unitarian community. Broadly, then, I'd like to articulate two points in response to Stephen's paper. The first about theological form, the second about context. And, as I hope I've made it clear, I offer these as observations in the spirit of dialogue and with no pretense that I am either a theologian or a religious professional. So, Unitarian theological form. Anselm described theology as faith-seeking understanding. And Stephen is broadly speaking from within systematic Christian theology as a particular means of doing this. Now, some of my best friends are systematic theologians, so I won't have a word said against it. But I'd like to point out the proliferation of theological approaches, and I'm particularly interested in those over the past 20 or more years, which might in fact be more fertile ground for informing a framework for Unitarian theological discourse. So I supervise PhD students who are working with the tools of public theology, political theology, and practical theology. And it surprises me that we aren't more actively involved in some of the discussions in these contemporary areas. I think maybe we'd be surprised to find we're really not as radical or as different as we think we are. There's also ordinary theology, and I've recently got a book by the wonderfully named Nick Astley. So this book on ordinary theology, I recommend it because it's a really interesting read, and it does, if you think of it from a Unitarian perspective, it looks quite different. So it's an approach which fascinates me because it's concerned with making sense of demotic theology, of the people theology, which I've been interested in since I did my own PhD. It's about the theology of the pews, of the people in the pews. How do people in churches exercise theological reflection? What informs their process of seeking understanding? Now, I think this is interesting because this approach of ordinary theology looks quite radical in a lot of the mainstream churches, but actually it fits very well with the particularly Unitarian way of thinking about revelation that Stephen has drawn our attention to. We are all part of the outworking of revelation. We all participate in and experience it. So listening to the voices of everyone is itself a potentially powerful theological tool. I also find an interesting resonance between the work of ordinary theology and the lived religion approach in religious studies, which has a long history but has been recently re-enlivened by Meredith Maguire. And she calls our attention to the way religious identity is fluid and messy. It strikes me that in Unitarian congregations, we have often been providing an institutional structure for what anthropologists and sociologists note happens all the time in all religion, a process of evolution and change at the individual level. Individuals make sense of the world by an aesthetic, personal, sometimes communal, shifting between experiences and ideas which do spiritual work for them in some sense and at some point. People hybridize beliefs, practices, and belonging in virtually all religious communities. But unusually, Unitarianism provides a context for this as a valid and conscious process. Now, I think this is something we could really put some thought into, because I think there may be some interesting theological fruit here. Attention, then, to ordinary theology or lived religion, to how Unitarians actually do this thing called church, and what they believe about what they do, can be potentially brought into a creative dialogue with more systematic theological accounts, which Stephen drew attention to, which might underlie, inform, or challenge us. I don't therefore consider that we necessarily need to position Unitarian theology within the traditional bounds of existing Christian theological forms, partly because I don't actually think sometimes we fit there, nor do I think there is such a distance between theology and religious studies. But I do consider that we should look to the contemporary work that is already happening in theology and religious studies and which speaks to our experience as church. And this brings me on to a related observation on Stephen's piece about theological form. What is it that gives our theological reflection, whether in the congregations or at some point in the academy, what gives it authority? Christian theology is not static, nor is Islamic jurisprudence or Buddhist philosophy. They all move with time and context, although I should say at that point that I do work with analytic philosophers a lot. I spend a lot of time telling analytic philosophers about how to do things, and they would really disagree. That whole point about context, they would really disagree, so we shouldn't take these things as givens. So, theology is not static, all moves with time and context, but importantly, there are accepted points of authority within the religions to which these accounts of theology can refer. There are texts or individuals invested with meaning and authority by the tradition. We do not have a shared central source of authority, and unlike our Quaker cousins, we haven't come up with an effective means of discerning shared authority, which I think is key to how our theology might evolve and develop. This is a good example where theology goes right to the heart of institutional practice. I put it to you that there is no theological rationale for how we make decisions about how we govern ourselves, and that this appears a peculiar omission for an organisation which claims to be a religion. And I'm more comfortable working with the word religion rather than faith for a variety of reasons, which came out of what Stephen said about what we're doing when we talk about faith. So what is the theological rationale, for instance, for who votes in a General Assembly meeting? For what issues are discussed and for who sets the agenda, for where we meet, those sorts of things. Now, I would suggest there are such theological rationales, but they are implicit and thus open to abuse. To echo Stephen's opening analogy of the nightclub church, what if those people who vote at the GA meetings were won over by a particularly impressive bit of oratory and passed a motion which most Unitarians considered unethical? Okay, we'd just ignore it. And that in itself tells us a lot, doesn't it? But the point is, we don't have authority except through structures which are not of themselves religiously informed. The authority of individual conscience is a fine thing and a principle which we must cherish, but it doesn't necessarily make for effective community organising in any context, and particularly not in a church. So this work to articulate a shared sense of authority might take us in all number of directions, but I'd humbly suggest it might be work that our tradition needs. Interestingly, the Hibbert Trust recently part-funded a piece of academic work on the Quaker threshing decision-making process, which you might have seen an account of in Faith and Freedom. And I find that particularly interesting. It's a colleague of mine who did that piece of work. So we've talked about it a lot. We had a good chat about it when I told her I was coming to talk today. I don't know whether you read that, but if you did read it, I wonder whether you thought about how it might inform our thinking about authority. These interesting models and methods are part of what we might learn from engagement with our religious cousins. So I agree, we don't want to be an interfaith gathering, but I do think we should learn from our close relatives religiously. So I've suggested that the work of Unitarian theology might be creatively informed by a range of approaches in theology and religious studies, with those focused on the individual being as potentially useful as institutional or traditional forms. I've also moved from this to asking how we articulate authority in order to discern good or strong or healthy Unitarian theological reasoning. I'd now like to move briefly on to think about context, and particularly the secular, as a way of further responding to Stephen's paper. So my second observation arising from Stephen's account is that I think we are insufficiently attuned to how secularism has shaped the way we talk about our tradition and how our current inattention to theology might itself be leading to our demise, which sounds terribly negative now I say it out loud. As somebody who works a lot in sociology of religion, it's all we ever talk about, secularisation thesis, so I can't not think about secularisation when I engage in this sort of conversation. The contemporary research on non-religious, religious nuns, as in N-O-N-E-S, and the secular is extensive and growing. It draws attention to the discursive boundary between religion and the secular and the complex nature of identity and belonging. A piece I've just co-written with a former student will add to this literature and is about the Sunday Assembly. One of the features my co-author noted in the course of his fieldwork was that the Sunday Assembly was articulating its identity through expressions of moral community as a form of secular sacred, and not in opposition to religion, but inclusive of religion. As a Unitarian, it strikes me as revealing that the Sunday Assembly holds such appeal for so many of us, and I move to consider whether the Sunday Assembly is the logical 21st century outworking of some of the theological forms of universalism that our Unitarian forebears left us with, and whether in this sense we need to reconsider our history and heritage. Unitarianism may be a featherbed for fallen Christians, but it may also be a waymarker for the demise of religion in Western society. The Protestant focus on the individual, and especially the personal search for truth and meaning, has been identified throughout the work on secularisation thesis as pivotal in the increased privatisation of religion, so the separation of church and state, the recourse to the individual as the place for religion. and so thus in various ways to the decline of religion. Now, Unitarianism is to some extent the apogee of Protestant thinking. Our secular context is part of our religious identity. Now, there are other senses in which secularisation theory speaks to our condition and might usefully be brought into our theological discussions. Danielle Hervé-Lejeune identified the way in which secularisation was a result of the failure of the chain of memory as a result of the dislocation of communities of faith in the Western context. Now, I'd like to suggest that what Stephen has identified in his piece, unintentionally, is that actually we have quite a limited theological chain of memory. We refer back to Martineau or Adams without stopping off in between to ask how we got from there to here and whether the place we have got to, I'd describe it as an absence of shared theological discussion, is where anyone wants to be or where even they thought we were going to get to. As individuals, we step into our community with a relatively limited set of tools to help us establish links in that chain of memory. We don't have a set of resources which link us to our past or our future that are entirely our own. Instead, we take resources from all over the religious world. But importantly, we don't own and articulate our magpie tendencies sufficiently to give a robust account which claims it as a tradition. So it isn't really surprising this broken chain of memory has occurred. We focus on individual identity and belief without conscious framing of this as a process, and therefore we reinvent how we express our communal identity with alarming regularity. I suggest we do so generationally, and with varyingly effective levels of theological coherence. Without this chain of memory about who we are and the authority it may lend our endeavours, what precisely do we do if some among us wish to see us as a Sunday assembly that happens to have our own buildings? Our lack of theological account, therefore, does not protect us from the effects of secularisation, make us more attractive in postmodern or liquid modernity in the current times. Instead, I think it increases the threat secularisation poses to us. Yet it need not be this way. I'd argue that we could be speaking to the condition of religion in the 21st century West much more effectively, based on our history, but also, importantly, based on the lived experience of messy, creedless religion with which people do theological work all the time. There's a third way in which I think engaging with the privatisation of religion as an aspect of secularisation and a key part of our religious tradition and identity may do useful work for us in thinking about our community and what tradition means for us. So if we say that what we believe is entirely private and validated only by the individual, even if shared, we say that even within a church, we're espousing the separation of belief from governance, but perversely doing so within the domain of religion. We're saying belief is separate from polity, even within our tradition. We do not have a purpose as church if all our functions could be carried out by an organisation which did not consider itself to be religious. Equally, we do not have a purpose as a church if the lack of shared theological conversation means anything goes, returning to Stephen's points. So our secular context, then, is not just something we must grapple with as an external force, but something we have to articulate as part of our own religious identity, whether we see it as a positive socio-political development or not. So I see this as another potentially fruitful point where religious studies might usefully inform our theological discussions. If we start thinking and talking more about what it is we do and how to articulate that beyond the sometimes strained notions of liberalism that I think we rely on, we might find both greater depth to our thinking and a greater sense of belonging. Stephen's paper and this conference is an important opportunity for us to stop and ask what it is we think we're doing. I don't think all of the work Stephen shows us needs doing can be achieved anytime soon. But I hope I've outlined some of the reasons why I think the work needs doing and some of the further complexity we might need to engage with. If we do not engage with the knotty work of establishing a theologically coherent way of discussing who we are, of developing a shared sense of authority perhaps, a way of asking the difficult questions, challenging the accepted forms within our tradition, then I think we're failing to live up to those key features of Unitarian theology that Stephen articulated as the immediacy of the holy and the ever-unfolding nature of truth, which I'd be surprised if any of us disagreed with.